Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, we're all aware that for their number, patients with superficial bladder cancer provide an enormous amount of our workload. And for the reasons partly of husbanding our precious resources, and also because lots of these patients come up for negative checks, reducing the amount of irritation and upset to them, it would be useful if we could do less check cystoscopies than we do. Many people have looked at this before and they've come up with various prognostic markers, some of which are extremely complicated. But perhaps the simplest prognostic groups were suggested by the MRC working party on superficial bladder cancer in a paper in the Journal of Urology, which was mentioned in the last presentation. They combined the 417 patients in several MRC studies and looked at them from the point of view of prognostic markers for recurrence. And they came up with two factors which overridingly were more important than the others. The first one was the result of the 3-month check cystoscopy, either positive or negative. And the second one, the number of tumours at presentation, either single or multiple. And from these two factors, you can form three prognostic groups. A low-risk group, who have a single tumour at diagnosis and a negative 3-month cystoscopy. An intermediate-risk group, with multiple tumours at diagnosis or a positive 3-month cystoscopy. And a high-risk group, multiple tumours at diagnosis and a positive 3-month cystoscopy. The suggested protocols for these patients were as follows. The low-risk Category 1 patients would go straight on to annual check cystoscopy following the first 3-month check. The intermediate-risk group would have a 3-monthly cystoscopy for a year and then go on to 6-monthly for a further year and then annual thereafter. And the high-risk group would have 3-monthly check cystoscopies for 2 years and then go on to annual check cystoscopy. Any patient who recurs after the 3-month check cystoscopy is reassessed, going back to the beginning, and they may be reassigned to one of the one or other of the groups, depending on that. Now, one of the criticisms, or possible criticisms, of the MRC figures was that these were all patients who had been entered into superficial bladder cancer studies, and they don't therefore represent all comers, because people are selected to go into the trial, and perhaps they're lower risk patients than others. And in fact, I believe that the recurrence rates in the MRC studies are lower than you would expect for superficial bladder cancer in general. And so we did a sort of what-if analysis, looking at the impact of implementing these prognostic categories on our patients. Now, this was a retrospective analysis, but it was done on prospectively recorded information. And these are 159 patients, all comers, presenting with superficial transitional cell carcinoma of the bladder. And they all had prospectively gathered follow-up data for more than 12 months following the first check cystoscopy. You'll see that there is a mix of grades and stages, and because it's the real world, in some of the tumours, a precise T category was not decided by the pathologist. Again, a mix of single and multiple tumours. When you look at the arrangement of these patients in the prognostic groups, you'll see that the information from the number of tumours at presentation and the result of the 3-month check cystoscopy is quite independent of grade and stage. There looks to be a trend towards higher grade in the category 3 patients, and again, more T1 tumours. The differences are not statistically significant. This is a sort of cost-benefit analysis based on what would have happened if we'd followed these protocols ourselves. You you'll see that the majority of patients fall into the low risk group, with progressively smaller numbers in the intermediate and high risk group. Four patients from the group overall subsequently developed muscle invasive cancer. If we look at the actual numbers of cystoscopies performed, you'll see that there were the vast majority of work was done in the lower and intermediate risk group patients. And the positive cystoscopy rate was much lower in the low risk group, as you would expect, than in the high risk group. If we had followed the MRC protocols, the numbers would have been much smaller in the low risk group, and you'll see that there was more effort placed in the high risk group patients than would have been, than we actually did. And as a result of that, our positive cystoscopy rate was more comparable across the three groups than it was previously. You can only say what this adoption of this policy would have done in terms of delaying diagnosis in the low-risk group of patients, because clearly the other groups of patients are actually having more cystoscopies performed. But because it's a retrospective analysis, you cannot say that you are advancing the diagnosis of more frequently occurring tumours. There were 30 tumours from 14 patients that had their diagnosis delayed by a mean of 4 months. If we followed the rules, the MRC rules strictly, one of the low-risk group of patients was a G3PD1 tumour, and that patient progressed. And in fact, all the patients who progressed, all the four out of the 159 patients who progressed from the total group, had either G2 or G3PD1 tumours at diagnosis. And I think there's a very strong case for making these a totally separate group of patients for follow-up. That just shows graphically what the change in the workload would have been. This is our actual workload, and this is what it would have happened if we'd followed the MRC protocols. There would actually be a 2% increase in the number of cystoscopies done, but the work would have been much better targeted than we actually did. So in conclusion, adoption of the MRC follow-up policy would have resulted in targeting of cystoscopic follow-up to higher risk group patients, a 2% increase in the cystoscopic resources required, and delayed diagnosis of tumour progression in one patient. And as I've said, I think that G3PD1 tumours should be excluded from this type of protocol. Perhaps other uses of this type of protocol will be to use flexible check cystoscopy early in the lower risk group patients, and perhaps give the intermediate and high risk group patients prophylactic intravesical chemotherapy. Thank you.
I think it'd be useful to have results back, and we could discuss both of these papers together. Are there any questions? Microphone number one.
Speaker from Lincoln. A question to both the speakers. Do you consider the smoker as a high-risk group, and do you change your attitude in checking them much quicker?
I think it just adds a little bit of complexity to it. I think we're trying to keep something very simple. A simple rule for everybody to follow, and all that following this protocol requires is that the urologist is at least partially sighted. It doesn't depend on a pathologist or any other information.
Yes, I'd agree. I think if you've got a moderate or well-differentiated tumour and it's solitary and it's small and they're clear at 3 months, tell them to stop smoking by all means. But I don't think it's more than that. Check it.
Can I just ask you both, are you unwilling to modify the standard follow-up cystoscopy regimen for G3 tumours and for T1 tumours, or is it just for the G3 T1? think, Steve, you were suggesting that it was only the G2 or
well,
G1.
Well, all the patients who progressed had either G2 or G3 PT1 tumours at diagnosis. They seem to be a very high risk group of patients.
Right, and a G3 PTA?
Well, there were quite a few of those, and none of them progressed.
Microphone 3.
Warren Chelmsford. If I come to you at 3 months with a PTA tumour, that's grade 1 or 2, how long would you be willing to accept that I should have a recurrence before you treat it?
A G2?
A G1.
G1
PTA tumour. How soon should I get it treated? Does it matter?
It probably doesn't. I mean, the risk of progression is minuscule. You're only talking about changes in size, not risk of muscle invasion. And I think, therefore...
So if it's not causing me any symptoms, I should keep it?
No, what I'm saying is that leaving it for a few months probably isn't going to do you any harm. I mean, clearly it will continue to grow, and therefore any resection that you do will be greater the longer you leave it.
I don't think I know the answer to that one. I'm not aware of any paper that's published resulting in that. I mean, we came as close as we could to answering that without protocol violators, but nobody really knows for sure.